Hello and welcome back to this conference. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming the wonderful Jessica Fern. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Jai. Hi.
So, Jessica, you have written a book called Polywise, which is your second book after Polysecure. Yeah. And today we're going to be talking specifically about moving away from codependency, primarily in non-monogamous relationships, though I think a lot can also be applied to monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
So do you want to start by defining what actually is codependency?
Yeah. So in the book, you know, because codependency is defined in many different ways. Sometimes it's very essentialized, like you are a codependent, or it's considered a diagnosis, or there's Codependence Anonymous. But we're defining it in the book, my co-author and I, David Cooley, as a pattern of behaviors that are learned. And these pattern of behaviors are really interfering with sort of a healthy expression of yourself and healthy autonomy, where your sense of self has really become enmeshed with somebody else.
That makes a lot of sense. I really like that as a definition, that it's that sort of losing that sense of self, losing healthy autonomy. So yeah. It's not saying that codependency is bad if you have any kind of dependency on someone. It's that when you're so dependent that you totally lose your sense of self. Makes sense that that would be considered a toxic trait. So,
yes, exactly.
And so, what are some examples of codependent behaviors that can show up in relationships?
Yeah, and there's a whole range, a whole spectrum of sort of the subtle to the wow, obvious toxic, right? And so the subtle can even just be not knowing what your own feelings and needs are. Always kind of asking someone else or your partner what they think, what they want ahead of yourself, right? Struggling with saying no, not even knowing what your boundaries are, or maybe knowing, but you have, you know, you can't assert your boundaries in this relationship or connection. But then it can also be, you know, you take on your partner's feelings. So if they're feeling a certain way, you think you have to feel that way too. Or the seesaw, if they're feeling down, then you have to go up, or vice versa, right? Or your sense of esteem or worth or value is only coming through this relationship. Often in codependency, there's also the behaviors of like one partner or person is overfunctioning and the other is underfunctioning. And that can get very toxic and extreme, where maybe the overfunctioner, you know, is constantly bailing someone out. They're in this rescuer role. And the underfunctioner might think they can't even live or survive without this other person. Yeah. So that would just be some examples.
Yeah, I must admit, I can resonate with a lot of those examples you're giving, right? And it's interesting because I noticed that those patterns can come up in me, not just in romantic relationships, but in other relationships as well. So I'm curious, do you find that this kind of toxic codependency, like what kind of relationships does it appear in? Is it primarily in romantic relationships, or can it be in other relationships as well?
It absolutely is in really, I think, any relationships. I think just people seek more help for it in their romantic relationships, because we tend to prioritize those more in adulthood, you know, culturally, societally as well. But this usually does have its root in our childhood relationships, our family relationships. But many people can feel codependent with friends, with platonic, you know, relationships, with bosses, coworkers, any of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I recently had a relationship rupture with my closest friend. We'd been friends for about 12 years and like best friends for about 7 years. And as I came out of that relationship, I realized just how codependent it actually was, how much there was this sense of needing that kind of harmony, of constantly looking after, you know, each other's needs. And we actually framed it as a really positive relationship, right? We were like, oh, we're constantly very merged and happy, and we don't really argue when we look after each other's needs and that kind of thing. And so I'm curious again about that, you know, really recognizing when we are in these codependent dynamics, right? You gave some examples earlier, but how do we really recognize, how do we know whether we're in just a happy relationship, like a, you know, a happy, loving, mutually loving relationship, again, whether that's with a partner or with a friend or with a housemate, with a neighbor, whoever it is, versus when it's actually becoming codependent?
Yeah, so some obvious signs will be that it feels starts to feel dramatic and toxic, and it's not feeling good, right? We feel like we're overextending or in a lot of sort of drama and tension, you know, or fighting with this person. But it doesn't have to include those things, right? I think the first time I realized my own codependent behaviors wasn't a romantic partnership, it was with a best friend in my 20s, and realizing, oh wow, I love this relationship. This is one of the most important people to me. But I don't feel like I can say no. I feel like there's only some parts of me that I can show, and I have to sort of conceal other parts of me because it's going to upset my friend. I can't tell them about certain successes because they'll go into shame. You know, that I'm doing this sort of tippy-toeing around their, you know, sensitivities or avoiding their shame. Right. So we can ask ourselves, oh, does this feel like a reciprocal enough relationship? You know, is there enough give and take? Do I feel like I'm under functioning and relying too much on this person, right? Which is different than healthy interdependence. Do I feel like I'm over functioning? Do I feel like I'm compromising my sense of self to stay in this connection?
And I think that's really important that, like, is it mutual, right? Is it,
Yeah.
and then am I under functioning or over functioning in this relationship, or is it actually like equitable, mutual? And of course, you know, mutual relationships doesn't always mean that you're exactly the same in the relationship,
Exactly.
but it's that everyone's needs are being met. And I think that that's an important distinction to be made here.
Right. It's not about it being equal and the same, but there's that sense of enough give and take and balance.
Exactly. And you talked about how often these codependent patterns can start in childhood, right? And so, considering your first book was all about attachment theory, polysecure, and building secure attachment in non-monogamous relationships, I'm curious about like the link, which, and again, attachment often starts as well in early childhood and early childhood relationships. So I'm curious about the link between attachment and codependency.
That's a great question. So, yes, those of us that are in more of a secure functioning or secure attachment, we are less likely, you know, to get into these, especially more toxic codependent dynamics, because we're better able to say, I value myself and I value you. I know how to do connection and I know how to do separation, right? But those of us that have, you know, insecure attachment styles are more likely to be in these codependent dynamics, not because it's even conscious or we want it, right? A lot of it is just because it's what's familiar to us, right? To either be sort of in this push or pull dance with someone, right? What can be one aspect of that codependency, or especially with the anxious, preoccupied expressions of insecure attachment, where we're really latching on to our partner and really looking externally for that sense of worth and validation. Yeah.
That makes sense. And again, it makes sense in the whole over under functioning in a relationship, right? I think people with different attachment styles are more prone to one way or the other.
Yeah.
And again, I'm curious because we've talked a little bit about how this is applicable both to monogamy and non-monogamy, and how a lot of your audience often is people practicing ethical non-monogamy or consensual non-monogamy or polyamory or however people want to name it. And yet, you know, there's also a lot that people in monogamous relationships can learn. And so I'm curious, these codependent behaviors, these codependent dynamics, how do they show up differently, do you believe, in monogamous and non-monogamous relationships?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of monogamous relationships can get by a lot longer without catching their codependent dynamics. And a lot of the mono-romantic narratives and ideals sort of encourage this almost codependent dynamic. We're half of a whole. You're my better half. You complete me, right? That our sense of identity is about being in this particular couple and relationship, right? And all of our passwords to things or profile pics sort of express that, right? This coupledom that is sort of, you know, prioritized over everything else. So just that, you know, sometimes people, I have a little section in the book, you know, is it codependency or the romantic ideal? And it's hard to tease apart, right? So I think in monogamy, a lot of people can get away with it longer, so to speak. But then if a couple, let's say, is opening up, it's so much harder to open up and have a codependent dynamic with the partner you opened up with and actually do non-monogamy well. So that's really what we're exploring in the chapter, is to be aware of how difficult that is and how necessary it is to, you know, explore your codependent behaviors and work on them. And then, you know, in non-monogamy, though, of course, codependency also arises. I think a lot of people are a better upfront of negotiating, you know, and catching those tendencies. Or it's harder to become codependent with certain partners because you're not necessarily on the relationship escalator with them, or you're not necessarily going to be nesting with them or creating a domestic family life with them. So people are usually better able to catch it, but it still happens for sure.
Interesting. And, you know, you talk about how, especially in monogamous relationships, it can be harder to notice, right? Because it's so aligned often with like the romantic ideals, which are so pushed forward in like mainstream media, fairy tales, rom-coms, you know, it's that they lived happily ever after, you know, you meet, you live happily ever after. And I think that those ideals, those expectations can weigh heavily on us a lot of the time. And I know that I've been very conditioned by those, like most other people. And so, again, why we've touched upon this already a little bit, but like, why is it actually a toxic trait, this codependency, as opposed to just, yes, but like, why not completely merge one's life with someone else? Why not just live happily ever after? Why, you know, what is wrong with it?
Totally. I think it's beautiful to merge our life with someone else, right? And I'm not against that at all. And I've done that myself, right? But the choice of what am I merging is very different than I'm losing myself in this relationship. And I don't have a sense of self outside of this relationship or this family system. So that's the distinction of when it crosses the line, you know, or there's can be very conscious ways that we say, yes, I don't want to do these tasks because you do them better. So it makes sense for you to do them and for me to do these other things. And we're being more efficient with our time, you know, but that's interdependence, where we are relying on each other, right? Which is very different than a learned helplessness that I can't function without this person at all. So that's when it crosses the line.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm so grateful you brought in this word interdependence, right? Because sometimes people think that the only alternative to codependency is hyper-independence. And I think that that can be just as toxic. And I'm wondering if you have anything to say about that.
Yeah, I just think it's a myth. It's a falsehood. I mean, as humans, we are social creatures. And even though we are wired differently and some want more connection than others, There's no human that's just solely living by themselves without ever having previously learned anything from another human before them, right? So it's just, we do need connection. We do need community, of course, to varying degrees. And this hyper-independence where we're just avoiding or pushing away, you know, connection, right? It's just the opposite end of this pendulum swing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, I think, we have codependency on one side, we have hyper-independence on the other, and then you were talking about interdependence as an alternative. So could you define a bit more about what is interdependence, and then we'll talk about how we can move from codependency into interdependence?
So interdependence is going to first allow that there's two or more autonomous humans, right? That are able to articulate their needs and their preferences and negotiate them and respect them, respecting the differences of each other. So really allowing each other to be different and embracing those differences and the challenge that come with those differences as well. And then figuring out, what does it mean to be close and connected and to rely on each other and to depend on each other and to give some of that control that I might have over to someone else. Right. Yeah. And it's very beautiful. And it can be too, it's not static, right? The way we're interdependent with a partner or partners will evolve and change over time, depending on what's going on in our life.
That's really beautiful. And so how do we move then from codependency into this interdependency?
Yeah. So I think it's both individual work and then it's relational work. So that individual piece is starting to, you know, do your trauma work, right? Everything that sort of you've seen in this conference as well at the individual level of defining oneself. What are my values? What are my wants? What are my needs? Building the capacity to be in touch with yourself, right? Having self-care, having a secure attachment internally, that would all be part of it. In the book, we talk about becoming your own source. So instead of outsourcing your happiness or value or worth to someone else, right? We can still get that from other people, of course, but really finding those places internally that I am the source of my own love and inspiration and happiness and value and worth is huge. And so, you know, this isn't a small task, it's a journey. And then simultaneously in relationship, looking at what are the ways I show up that are contributing to a codependent dynamic. So first defining what are the codependent dynamics or behaviors between us and how and what am I responsible for on that end, right? And if you have a person that is willing to look at their end too, and you look at the cost and benefits, because we get a lot of these behaviors too, and being honest about that. And then also the cost of them on ourselves, on each other, the relationship, on others around us. So that's one of the things in non-monogamy too, just a tangent, is if two partners are codependent, it doesn't allow a lot of space for anyone else. And that's so difficult, specifically in non-monogamy, right? Of there isn't enough space to have a full relationship with a partner if they're codependent with somebody else.
Absolutely. And I think whilst it's true in non-monogamy, it can also be true in monogamy, right? Like there's not enough much space for close friendships, for for any other relationship to develop. You know, even work relationships can be limited sometimes. And so the capacity to grow in your career or to pursue new hobbies or to, yeah, make new connections is limited in these codependent relationships patterns, whether it's monogamy or non-monogamy. And then of course it's more obvious in non-monogamy because people are looking for maybe other partners and there's a lot less room for that. And having been another partner to very codependent relationships, I can recognize how it's also painful in that way. But I think it's true in both cases.
Yes, absolutely.
And sorry, I felt like I'd maybe interrupted you. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Okay, just doing that work in your relationship of taking ownership and redefining. Okay, we've had this dynamic. What are each of our behaviors towards this? And what can we do differently? So that's a process to take on. And sometimes it does take time because it's not just changing a behavior as if you can do that in a quick pivot. Sometimes it's like, oh, there's skills I need to learn, right? There's certain capacities I have to develop in order to actually change my behaviors. So, you know, letting the relationship have the space and time to evolve into more of an interdependence.
And what are some of those skills and capacities which feel important
to develop? Yeah, so I forget if in the book we talk about this because my co-author, David, we were married for 10 years. And one of our dynamics was I would like overfunction with like his email would be up and I'd see his email and he didn't have a lot of tech or management skills the way I did. It's just easy for me. So I would do these little, oh, did you see the email from your boss? Or, oh, do you need help with this? You know, sending this and that. And so in us shifting that dynamic, he actually had to learn time management skills. He had to learn like literal email skills, you know, that just weren't there. And I couldn't expect him to just be able to do that overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And similar, like he's the cook, you know, and he was a professional chef. And that was one of the things that in our interdependent dynamic always made sense for him to cook more. But then it realized like, oh, I actually have to up level and at least be able to do some things in the kitchen, you know, to contribute occasionally that way, right? Not just fully, it's always on him.
And I'm glad you made that distinction, because I was going to ask about what you were saying about that interdependence, where sometimes it's more like it makes more sense, right, for certain people to do certain tasks than others. But I really hear that difference of when it's like, again, totally reliant on the other person, not having any ability that if like David was out of the house, you had to cook for yourself or vice versa. If you're away and he has to send an email, you know, then there's that kind of really like reliant on the other, which is different to, hey, we're living together. It makes more sense for you to do the majority of the cooking and for me to do the majority of the admin. But then within that, you know, there's still that kind of both taking responsibility for it, it sounds like, or both having that kind of making it an explicit agreement as opposed to just relying and letting the other take over.
Yeah, exactly. Where, watching is one of us falling into like a learned helplessness around this thing, which is different than I'm not really going to learn this thing. It's not in, right, my makeup to sort of be this way. But if I had to, I could call someone else and hire them or call a friend to help me figure it out as well. I wouldn't be helpless if you weren't around.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned as well that, you know, it's particularly helpful if you have someone else who's willing to do the work with you. And,
Yeah.
but sometimes that work can, if especially if the other person isn't doing it or other persons involved, can be scary, right? Because as you say, it's creating these shifts. And there's a quote in the book where David talks about the moment that you both started moving towards differentiation, and maybe we can define that in a minute. And that, you know, you both had to develop these skills and you both, you know, started working on your autonomy. And he says, honestly, in moments it felt nearly impossible not to interpret the healthy changes she, i.e., you, was making as a kind of abandonment, right? And so I want to talk about that fear of like, as we move away from codependency, it can actually feel really scary, and it can almost feel like the other person or persons are they're abandoning us, they're being somehow mean, rejecting, all those kind of things. And it was really interesting as I was reading your book, whilst like rationally I could, it made a lot of sense to me and I agreed with everything that I was saying, I was having a very visceral reaction as I was reading it, being like, no, don't leave me, don't leave. And I don't even know who, exactly. I don't even know who I was shouting, don't leave me to, right? And so that's, again, it makes sense that you talk about needing to work on your own traumas as part of the work, as part of the stages. But let's talk about that, you know, the negative or the difficult emotions that can arise when we go through this work, when we go through the stages of moving away from codependency, especially if that's everything we've ever known.
And ultimately, I'll start with when we're truly differentiated, I am my own person and you are your own person. That's where we have true connection and intimacy, right? Whereas in these codependent dynamics, it's like I'm a partial person, and I'm hiding these others or trying to exile these other aspects of me, and you're a partial person, and that's how we're bonded. Right, which is very different than all of us is allowed, and we do the harder work of figuring out how do two people or three people have four have all of us allowed, right? So that's just like when we're differentiated, that's when we have true intimacy. Yes, but in this process of there's been codependency and we're differentiating, it can be so painful. And David says it perfectly in that quote, is that even though he knew it was healthy, it felt like I was abandoning him, right? And that was I think he talks about it, I have permission to share this, that was a younger part of him that was looking to me as a mother saying, you're abandoning me, right? Because it in adult relationships, yes, there's some exceptions. But abandoned, like where we can truly abandon each other, but most of the time that word abandonment is not appropriate or relevant to adult relationships and the way we kind of use it, right? And the irony was I was actually showing up more of saying we need to be healthy together. I'm not actually leaving you. So we have to look at the parts of us that are feeling abandoned, that might have an actual history of abandonment from childhood. And that's important inner work for this.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you talking about that, like importance for people to show up as all of themselves in relationship, right? And it doesn't matter how many people are in the relationship, a healthy relationship is where everyone can show up and be seen and apply their skills where it's useful, and, you know, give some of the reins where it's useful, but that there's space for the fullness of people. And, you know, I think that's such an important distinction, and why it's really important to do the work, even though it's painful and uncomfortable, to move from a place where you're sort of having to hide parts of yourself or diminish parts of yourself, or like perform to what you, the perceived expectations of the other or others, into something where actually it's really wholesome and we can be fully accepted and have this kind of, I think you talked about symbioticism in the book.
Symbiosis is a stage, yeah.
Symbiosis. Do you want to speak a bit more about that?
Mm-hmm. So this is the couple's developmental model developed by Ellen Bader. And she talks about these stages of couples development that really parallel childhood development with a caretaker or parent. And so first there's this symbiosis, the couple bubble, the falling in love, the romantic phase. We're very familiar with that, the new relationship energy. And this is a good thing. It's like two or more people need to have this symbiosis phase to create this bonding, right? We need a strong bond to continue on to what we're going to navigate together in life or our relationship. But we're not meant to stay here. We're not meant to stay in the honeymoon, right? And after that comes differentiation. Oh, I'm actually a whole person. You're a whole person. How are we different? And in this phase of differentiation is where a conflict usually increases. And it freaks partners out. Because it's harder. It's like, oh, we're disagreeing more. We don't see everything eye to eye. You know, we don't want everything the same, as sort of in the symbiosis phase. Like a lot of that is just, we don't see it. You know, there's kind of rose-colored glasses on, right? We miss it. And these differences start to show up because the hormones aren't there. Now, what happens is, because there's increased conflict, we can keep going forward and through it and get through it. And then we move into this more individuation, deeper intimacy, and so on. Or couples are like, I don't like this. Let's just go back. And it's not really a true symbiosis you're going back to. That's the codependency. Right. Mm-hmm. I'll shut up about this if you shut up about that. I won't be this part of me if you won't be that part of me. Like, there's things we just don't talk about, places we just don't go. Right. Yeah. So that's sort of part of the model that we're presenting in the book, is we really need this differentiation phase. And if we go through it, there's a lot more the relationship can explore and experience together.
And that's the work which is extremely uncomfortable and difficult to do, but which is so rewarding if everyone is willing to do it. And yet again, you know, sometimes if only one person is doing the work, the risk is the other person like might feel abandoned or something, but it's also that they might end up breaking the relationship, rupturing, walking away from the relationship because it feels uncomfortable to them, because they've been accustomed to you behaving a certain way, being a certain role for them, and then suddenly that's different, that's changing, right? And differentiating.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, I was in a, not long ago, had an ending of a relationship that I realized, oh, I was kind of over accommodating something. And once I realized, oh, this isn't good for either of us, and I'm going to stop over accommodating this thing. I mean, they didn't like it, and it really ended the relationship because of that. Yeah. So everyone involved has to want to do this work. And of course, not everyone has to, but it's really hard to move forward together if you don't have everyone doing that work.
Absolutely. And do you have any words of advice for people who are willing to do the work, but where, you know, like in your case, or in my recent case with my friend, where the other person just isn't either able to, or isn't willing, or just steps away from the relationship?
Yeah, I mean, try a few times to make that request so you feel like you put everything that you could into it, so that if you have to walk away, you at least feel like, okay, I threw everything I could at this, you know, like, hey, can we do this? Hey, can we explore this? I really want us, and, you know, hold the torch of, I want us to be healthy, right? This is going to be even better for us. But if someone isn't capable of doing that, or able or willing, then knowing like, this is what's best for us, because to stay in that dynamic isn't going to serve. And it's usually just gets worse. Yeah. And sometimes people can come back together, you know, months or years later. And
it's
they
true.
have grown, right? And they can start in a better or different place. So it's not always that it's permanently over if we need to step away.
Yeah, and people do the work at their own pace, right? And by the work, I don't just mean the work of differentiation, but the work of healing childhood trauma wounds, of figuring out relationship patterns, of understanding their own toxic behaviors in relationships. And, you know, we have so many excellent resources on this conference for doing just that. And yet, not everyone always goes at the same pace. So sometimes there is a lack of compatibility, I think, with the people you love or the people you're in a relationship with. And it doesn't necessarily mean it has to end forever, but also sometimes it does.
Yeah, and in non-monogamy, people have more of a allowing of relationship transitions and relationship fluidity. You know, so I've seen it much more common where someone's like, oh, I do need to do certain aspects of work and I'm not fully available to be a certain kind of relationship or partner. But that doesn't mean we have to stop seeing each other altogether. Whereas in a monogamous, you know, structure, it might mean I can't meet the majority of your needs, so we have to break up.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that, you know, is different between monogamy and non-monogamy, but that also people can maybe learn from non-monogamy, because I think people even in monogamous relationships have lots of relationships in their lives, you know, whether it's their friends, their housemates, their family members, their work colleagues. And so that learning how to de-escalate or transition or you know, relationships or be able to communicate needs and say, hey, for the next few months, I'm not going to be as available, or, you know, I'm going to be sharing my time in this way without necessarily having to mean having to be an all or nothing situation.
Exactly. Right.
Jessica, thank you so much for this conversation. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, this has been wonderful. Yeah. Thank you.
How can people find out more about you and your work?
Just jessicafern.com. They can find me there.
Amazing. Thank you. And I also did get to interview David Cooley, your co-author. We talked about breaking toxic behaviors. I think, yeah, healing toxic behaviors using the RRC model. So I recommend people check that out. And I also interviewed Martha Kalpi about 6 principles of healthy relationship, again, applicable to non-monogamy and monogamy. And we talked a lot about differentiation as one of them. So if people want to find out more about that, they can also check that out. Thank you so, so much for your time today, Jessica. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Great.